Welcome to the Reclamation Nation, where we help you reclaim control of your health and wellness. I'm Coach Ryan, a certified personal trainer, health coach, and former military physical trainer with certifications in orthopedic exercise, longevity, wellness, fitness, nutrition, and behavioral change. I have over 30 years in the fitness industry.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer. I'm a practicing pharmacist, health coach, and certified functional medicine specialist. I have over 10 years of personal and professional experience in the health and wellness field.
Our goal is to raise awareness about the responsibility and potential you have in managing your own health.
As a reminder, nothing in this podcast is designed to diagnose, treat, or cure health illnesses, but is presented as educational and entertainment material. Please consult your personal healthcare provider with any specific needs. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Reclamation Nation. I'm Dr. Jennifer, and I'm here with Ryan.
Hello.
Today, we're going to be talking about epigenetics. Basically, and this came straight from the CDC website, I'm just going to give you this quick definition. Epigenetics is the study of how your behaviors and your environment can cause changes that affect the way your genes work. So in layman's terms, you have your DNA,
right?
Your DNA tells you who you are, but what your attitude is, what your mindset is, what your physical and emotional environment is also tells your genes how to behave.
Foods you eat, activities you jump into, all of this?
Everything that you expose yourself to in your environment. So absolutely. It's interesting because you're... genes are basically set from the moment that you're conceived. You've got a little bit of your mom, a little bit of your dad. That fertilized egg is already encoded with a specific DNA sequence. So you've got these codes and it imprints in this beautiful little spiral. And then what, right? Everything that your mom is exposed to while you're in the uterus, everything that's going on in her environment, everything that she's taking into her body is going straight to you, the baby. And that is already developing how your body is going to progress as you grow. So thinking, I mean, we already know this, like high stress pregnancies with complications, it's obviously smoking and alcohol,
right?
Those kinds of toxins during pregnancy, we've all been told are bad because of the birth defects and things like that. But no one really understood why until, you know, epigenetics became this really big study. Those toxins and all the trauma and the stresses going on are telling your genes how to behave. So
it's not changing the genetic structure.
Right.
It's changing how those genes are read and what manifests out of that, how they're read.
Exactly. And how, what it tells the body to do. So your cells already have those genes encoded in them, but those cells are then told, okay, you're going to go to the heart and you're going to be a heart cell. You're going to go to the stomach and be a stomach cell. You're going to go to the hair and be a hair cell. Those characteristics are all being told what to do from an early stage.
But so epigenetics is really the study of how the things that you're exposed to, your environment, the foods you eat, the stress you're under, the trauma you go through, everything that happens in your life changes how certain genetic structures are read and expressed, which explains why two siblings, same genes, could have opposite physical appearance. Am I close?
100%. That's spot on. Even their personality. So you can have siblings who grew up in the exact same household. A lot of the studies that we've seen talk about twins, and they're for obvious reasons.
Right.
They have identical DNA, but why do they kind of look a little bit different, or why do they act a little different? And one of the interesting studies I found was that they took a set of twins who were about 3 years old, and then they compared them to a set of twins who were about 50 years old. Mm-hmm. And while, of course, those sets of twins had identical makeup, genetic makeup, what they found was the twins who were in their 50s had a lot more significant physical and emotional characteristic differences between each other.
Genetically.
Exactly. So. Okay. Basically, those three-year-old twins, because they spend the majority of their 3 years of life together, kind of under the same stresses, the same circumstances, same kind of home and nurturing environment, they were a lot more equivalent than the set of twins who were 50 years old, who probably at that point had spent most of their life apart. So you kind of figure the average lifespan, you know, you're probably living at home with your parents until about the age of 18. then you kind of go off.
Well, into, I mean, in a perfect world.
I'm just giving a very basic example. Okay. I'm not overthinking it. But yeah, till about the age of 18, you're probably living at home with your parents. But basically, they're going to start living their own lives. And let's say one twin decides to stay in the U.S. and study at home, and another one decides to study abroad. From that moment, they're already exposing themselves to different cultures, different climates, different air quality, different foods. Mm-hmm. All of those factors play into how their genes are starting to express.
Right.
So back to my example from a previous episode where I knew those two twins, they had basically grown up together. They even worked together in the restaurant, but one was eating better, exercising, doing a lot of, you know, relaxation and mindfulness. The other one, not so much, eating a little bit more junk food, not really exercising. He was the one who ended up getting sick.
Right.
So obviously we know that lifestyle plays into all of this, but it's interesting how all those aspects in our environment tie into our DNA and what manifests from that physically.
So if you have one sibling who is a, let's say, a bookworm, they love reading, they love studying, they love doing all of that stuff, they stay inside a lot. The other sibling, not so much. They love being outside, they don't want to read. That's already affecting how, even though they are very similar genetically, that's starting to affect at that point how one is going to be if they stay on that path.
Right. Yes.
But that's only if they stay on that path. Let's say 6 years from there, the bookworm decides that he wants to now, or she wants to now, be outside more. And the other one has decided they want to, you know what I'm saying? So now do we have an opposite genetic expression?
So what's interesting about epigenetics is that it's somewhat reversible. So you can probably start off with, let's say, the bookworm being very sedentary and kind of just sitting at home and not really exposing themselves to, you know, nature and things of that sort.
Right.
They can still, they're going to have a set certain genetic expression going on. So maybe they're prone to gaining a little more weight, or, you know, maybe their internal clock is different. So maybe they're early risers versus, let's say, someone who's a little more active, outdoorsy, might get that adrenaline rush. So it's harder for them to kind of settle down as the day goes on. And they're probably the night owls who seek a little bit more of that adrenaline rush. But maybe over time, things do change. You know, they could meet someone, or they could just decide, okay, I've lived that phase of my life, I want to try something different. They can absolutely switch roles. But the process of kind of seeing the different changes in their life is going to, it's really unpredictable.
Okay.
Because you don't know what your genes are being told right in your body.
So I know that there are people who are, let's say, growing up in school, who are either very thin or very heavy. And you see them at, let's say, the high school reunion, the 20-year reunion. Mm-hmm. And it seems like some of the very heavy people have lost all the weight and now they're really athletic. And some of the athletic people that were, you know, they were jocks in high school and all the way through, and now they're very heavy people. It's not just a matter of being sedentary within your lifestyle. It's a matter of how the activity, the foods you eat, affects your genetic expression.
Sure. And actually, an example that I can think of just off the top of my head when it comes to food is something called phytoestrogen. So estrogen that basically comes from a plant source, and for example,
soybeans.
Soy, exactly. Okay. Everybody knows of soy. It mimics estrogen in the body. Mm-hmm. So basically, when you're eating soy products, your body recognizes that as a source of estrogen. Well, for most women, it sounds like a scary thing, but it's actually not. It's pretty healthy. There are very few populations of people who should not be consuming soy, but that's extremely limited. But again, that it's almost like the lock and key. You know, like the estrogen from the phytoestrogens is very similar in shape to the key of the natural estrogen in your okay body. It can fit in that same keyhole, the estrogen receptor, and your body's going to recognize it as, okay, this is an estrogen. I'm going to go ahead and turn on and activate and do what I need to do, considering I'm an estrogen receptor. So how food can mimic your own natural substances in your body is basically an example of epigenetics.
Okay. And some of it that I did read, because I did try to read through this. I promise you, I did try. Some of the stuff that I read was talking about how it turns on and turns off certain things. And I forget what the term is for that, but it would probably be helpful if anybody wanted to know for me to figure out what that is. But so there's a term for turning on and turning off certain genetic expressions, which is why people who are very similar in the same family, even some will have seemingly, you know, just an overload of, let's say, illness, because at an earlier age and an earlier point in their life, they went through things that the younger generation did not go through, that the younger siblings did not go through. And so it affects how those things were turned on and turned off. That is the part that I managed to read through, and I didn't explain it very well, but I think it's amazing how trauma at an early age can affect the rest of your life, not just psychologically, but genetically, how it can affect things that your body is able to do later on.
Absolutely. And honestly, one of the things that I really want to focus on with this episode is, like you mentioned, traumatic experiences. Our bodies, our cells actually memorize emotions. So whether or not you're thinking, okay, I'm not stressed out right now, I'm having a good day, everything feels fine, I feel good, your body is already prone to respond a certain way to certain stresses.
Right.
I'll give myself as an example. I have had stresses in my life all through early childhood. I came from a home where my parents weren't living together from an early age. I was about 2-3 years old when they split. So just that emotional, psychological stress of living between two homes, splitting different holidays, eating different foods, being told different rules and having to abide by those in certain households, how do you expect a child to turn on and off those thought processes every time they're going from one, you know, one environment to another?
Right.
Carrying that into my adult life, I don't handle change very well. I like to live a very predictable life. So when change occurs, let's say, for example, in my work environment, I personally, internally don't handle that change very well.
Right.
That emotional stress is something that my body automatically just, I cringe, I can feel my muscles tighten, I can feel the rage inside, the emotions. And I may not outwardly express it, but it's one of those things where, again, it's built kind of, it's attached itself to my DNA at such a young age that it's, even with my mindfulness workouts and my relaxation and my yoga and all of that, it helps me calm down, but ultimately that stress response is kind of, it's there. It's ingrained in me.
And I think it's important for people who have gone through traumatic experience, loss of a loved one, whatever that might be. When you go through these, they do affect your genetic expression. I just want to read this real quick because I brought it up and I didn't have this handy.
Go
I just
for
want
it.
To read this real quick. It's called DNA methylation. And this is from the CDC website on epigenetics. DNA methylation works by adding a chemical group to the DNA. So it doesn't change the actual structure of the DNA, it just adds a group to it. It says typically this group is added to specific places in the DNA where it blocks the proteins that attach to the DNA to read the gene. The chemical group can be removed through a process called demethylation. Typically, methylation turns genes off. Demethylation turns genes on. So when you go through a trauma, and something attaches, some chemical signal attaches to your genetic chain, it blocks an area that would normally be able to be read. It's almost like taking out a section of code in a computer program.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you removed it, but you're just blocking it from being read. And so when siblings, because that's the best way to look at this is two siblings who go through, you know, they have the same parents go through, one goes through a very traumatic experience, the other does not. The chances are that that traumatic experience will be transferred genetically from then on. I don't know how that's removed. Now we're getting into the psychiatry of it, but, and that's out of my pay grade.
Yeah. One of the things that I want to reiterate here is when we say trauma, it doesn't have to be anything extremely traumatic and dangerous.
No.
to the common, people hear the word trauma and their minds kind of run to the extreme, but I'm thinking trauma aside from, you know, physical or mental abuse could be anything as simple as cigarette smoke during pregnancy,
right,
or, you know, a tough delivery, for example, a baby being born with the umbilical cord wrapped around its neck. That lack of oxygen and that constriction can already start telling the body, hey, we're in danger, this is stressful, we're not going to make it. Your body goes into a panic mode even at that early infancy stage, and that that panic, that stress and trauma already marked itself on those genes. So your genes, you're basically hardwired. Like I said, from the moment of conception, everything your mom went through, but even something as simple or sorry, as early as, childhood, one of the things that I really want to emphasize with that is nurturing your children, giving them a safe environment to, express themselves freely without judgment, ask questions and get legitimate answers. I would never.
I told you so is a legitimate answer, isn't it?
No,
Oh.
it's not. And I'm not here to bash anyone's parenting styles or tell you what you have to do. I'm just encouraging people to provide them with the right amount of support. And if you can't physically or emotionally, be there for them in the capacity you feel that they would need, I encourage them to get some sort of help because the earlier you address these things, I mean, everyone knows that a child's brain is rapidly developing. When they say kids are like sponge, kids' minds are like sponges, it's literal. And what it's not just that they absorb what they're hearing in their environment, they're absorbing everything that they feel, that they see, that they process. Their senses are extremely heightened, and all of that is already affecting their genes and molding them to who they're going to become, how they're going to emotionally react in the future into their adulthood. And you were saying something just recently about how it's going to carry on into the next generation. At first, we were thinking, genetically, yeah, you're going to pass your DNA on to your children, but they're not necessarily going to carry on your stresses or your traumas. That's actually not the case. One of the studies that they did in 2005, what they noticed was that these gene expressions, these epigenetics, the traumas and some of the malformities were actually carried on into four generations of
Wow,
rats.
four generations down.
Right. So that's like, let's say me having some sort of experience and having that epigenetic manifestation, that would be my kids, my grandkids, my great grandkids, and then my great great grandkids, kind of all having that same expression. Of course, with epigenetics, we did say that you can possibly turn it on and off. So depending on, what that stressor was and how I took care of it, how I handled it, how I suppressed it or reversed it, hopefully that will lessen the burden of the future generations.
When we talk about within my lane, when we talk about obesity, we know that obesity is a social contagion. And now we know that the reason it's deemed contagious is because it does and can or can and often does affect the way that your genes are read. So, as an example, if you start hanging around people who like to eat a lot of fried food, a lot of the bad stuff, and your kids grow up eating a lot of the bad stuff, a couple of things have happened. We have known that you are now giving them the habits of eating really bad stuff. And so we see generation after generation of obese family, right? So the parents are obese, even though their great grandparents weren't. Now all of a sudden they are because they're eating highly processed foods, they're eating all the stuff they shouldn't, and they're teaching those habits to their children, and then those kids teach it to, and it travels on. Now we know that behaviorally, but now we see that not only are you teaching them behaviors, but you're passing on a change in your genetic line for generations. So as an adult, if you start eating the wrong things or start eating too much and not exercising and not doing all of the good stuff that you know you're supposed to do for yourself, you are actually changing your genetic expression. And then when you have children, you have passed on that genetic expression to them. And so now we have two reasons why it's really important for parents to take control of what the food is in the home, how much exercise people are getting. I hear it all the time about people who get, they say, "Oh, I get plenty of exercise at work. I don't need to join a gym. I don't need a trainer. I don't need to exercise. I get plenty of exercise at work." But
Do you work at an Amazon warehouse that you're like
so,
constantly moving? I don't understand. Most
and maybe
people
you do, but
don't.
the problem is that your kids are not.
Correct.
And that's where I'm going with that is that, yeah, maybe you do. But what about your children? You can affect their genetic expression by not exercising with them. Beyond that, you're teaching them behaviors. And so it's not only psychological. Now we know that it's clinically, we know that it's genetic also. So just another reason to jump in and start doing stuff with your kids. Stop eating all the crap. Stop eating too much of the crap. and stop telling yourself that you are just, you know, you're just supposed to be heavy. I hear that a lot. I'm just big bone. Trust me, your bones are no heavier than anybody else's.
Oh yeah, I've been to the bodies exhibit. Everyone's bones were the exact same size.
Yeah, there's no such thing as big boned. It doesn't happen. But you can change how your body reacts to the insulin, how your body reacts, the
hormones.
The hormones that go on. Yeah, the ghrelin, the leptin, all of that stuff is changed when you start doing that. And then it's changed not only in yourself, but in your kids and in their kids. What else?
So one of the things, obviously, that you mentioned was nutrients, but then that reminded me, I want to tell people what other driving factors there are for epigenetics, like what else is affecting the way our genes are expressed. Heavy metal toxicity, you know, mercury in your amalgams and lead from your water or your paint sources, things like that. Those heavy metals were not naturally meant to be in our bodies. So, of course, it's going to affect the way your DNA is read and expressed. There's a lot of inflammation that's probably going on. Mm-hmm. That sets off an entire cascade of your body trying to heal itself from the inside. But with that even being imbalanced, it's going to throw off other factors. So it's really just this vicious cycle. But aside from heavy metals, you've got hormones, could be artificial hormones or things added from your food sources.
Right.
You know, one of the biggest ones, viruses and bacteria. And I'm going to segue here for a second because I just kind of started getting lost in my own thought process when it comes to viruses and bacteria. The way a virus or a bacteria actually thrives in your body is it shuts down the genes that are expressed to support your immune system.
Right.
So it's telling your genes that it doesn't need to function that hard. It can take a rest. It's going to turn those genes off. Your immune system is going to start shutting down because it was told it's okay to.
Mm-hmm.
Then that just gives the virus and the bacteria this grand opportunity to survive and thrive and flourish in your body. It completely takes over our system. That's why we get sick.
Okay.
So, of course, we're all thinking now about this current virus situation mm-hmm. that we're in. And I started thinking, okay, we've been in the COVID pandemic for about 2 years now. And every day you're hearing new studies, new research, new side effects, and the way some people are actually storing the virus in their bodies, and it's basically hiding. It's almost like hibernating in some of our organs and tissue. And for almost the way like the herpes simplex virus does, it hibernates and just kind of stays dormant in your nerves. And under the right amount of stress conditions, let's say later on in your adult life, it can just break out and cause shingles. It's mm-hmm. the same exact virus, but the way your body is reacting to your environment, your stress levels, your nutrition, all those things, it's going to allow the virus to either show its ugly face again or just kind of stay dormant.
Okay.
So I don't know. I was just wondering, and I'm very curious to see, because only time will tell right now, what COVID is going to look like from an epigenetic standpoint, how it's going to affect us in the long term. Obviously, there's the emotional aspect that we talked about. Think mm-hmm. of all the first responders, you know, the frontline workers who are seeing the trauma and feeling the physical stress burden and just working to the point where they're burnt out. Their bodies are already under so much of a stress burden.
Right.
Their epigenetics are being impacted. Obviously, the stress of the patients who are sick, you know, what it's doing to that body. So it's really just this giant picture that I'm very interested in the next few years, hopefully once all of this has subsided, to see what impact it has on us as a human race.
I would like to see the difference between genetic expression of a person prior to COVID.
Oh, yeah.
And then that same person, even if they didn't get sick, even if they're not a first responder, just from the isolation, from the panic or hysteria, or whatever you want to call it. I'm neither pro nor anti-vaccination, but it would be interesting to see, since we know this about viruses, it would be interesting to see how the vaccination affects genetic expression down the road.
Sure.
I know several people who have had, you know, the triple vaccine. They've had the first two and then the booster and still got COVID. So it'd be interesting to see their genes and their genetic, you know, makeup, where the methylation is in them compared to someone else who maybe never knew they were sick or never got sick, or, you know, I can't believe anybody hasn't by now, but it would just be interesting to see exactly what's going on genetically that way, and how this, how the, not just the virus itself, but the stress of the shutdowns, the stress of the isolation, to see how that has impacted, 20 years from now, because you know it's going to.
Oh, of course.
It's
But I'm
got to.
also on even to play on that, I'm thinking, okay, the babies who were born to mothers who had COVID, maybe the baby was born healthy and didn't have any physical setbacks as far as they can tell at this early stage. But with the early childhood development, knowing that the mom had COVID while she was pregnant, what that's actually going to do to the baby's genetic expression as it grows. So that's this is going to be really fascinating, honestly. I feel like there's so much to touch on when it comes to epigenetics. It just like it's overwhelming, to be honest.
And it's difficult to talk about because there's so much science behind it. One of the things I did realize or did find out, epigenetics is not a clear, precise science. There's no single definition for epigenetics. You can go to the CDC, you can go to the World Health Organization, you can talk to different scientists, and different scientists look at epigenetics different ways. Some look at it from a behavioral standpoint, how it affects behavior. Others look at it from, an illness. Some people look at it from, just different ways that different scientists look at it. And so it's very difficult to get a clear, concise definition of epigenetics. But if anybody is interested, I would strongly recommend what CDC, you think?
CDC was a good one. I honestly just went to PubMed and typed in epigenetics and just read through the different articles and different studies that came up.
Right. And I think it's a fascinating topic. It's something that you can't get covered in 30 minutes or really
We just, yeah,
30
this
hours.
was
I
just
mean,
the tip of the iceberg.
the basic point here that we're trying to drive home is that the things you do, things you eat, the social media you consume, the general media you consume, the lifestyle you participate in, all of that changes your genetic expression, how your genes are read, and what manifests out of how it's read.
Absolutely. You're 100% spot on. And one of the things I really want to close off with here is again the fact that for the most part, epigenetics and its impacts are reversible. So what can our audience do now, right, to start taking control back and maybe making some alterations in their lifestyle? I'm a heavy advocate for environmental and internal detox. You want to clean out the toxins from your body, the heavy metals, the inflammation, balance your gut health, work on your emotional well-being with mindfulness and meditation. But that's all only just part of it. You have to really clean out your environment. Are you spending time with people who what I call emotional vampires, and they're just sucking the life out of you? Are you in a toxic work environment? Are you in a toxic relationship with a loved one, with your friends, with yourself even? Is there a lot of self-loathing versus self-loving? All of that is playing into who you are going to become and who you are becoming. Those factors are changeable. Working on your air quality, working on your water quality, your food quality. It sounds like a lot, and it can be, but with the right help and working, let's say, with someone like myself, a health coach and a functional medicine specialist, I have a whole protocol and procedure for doing this. Working with a personal trainer and who's also a certified health coach, Brian.
Like me,
Yes, that definitely helps. I mean, you want to work on your mindset as well as the physical. So.
All right. Where can people find you?
Can be reached at drjenniferfernandez.com. Or on my Facebook page, which is Your Holistic Wellness LLC. And I would love to hear from you. If you guys have questions or feedback, if you want more information on any of the episodes that we've done, we really just want to bring awareness. So I haven't spent time getting into the real nitty-gritty details, but I would love to talk about it. I'm a science geek, so please come with questions.
Absolutely. You can find me at tackletics.net. You can go on my Instagram at train_tackletics. Till next time.
Bye.
Bye.